Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 35 in the series, entitled Jewish Guilt, recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning. As usual, Perek Yud Aleph. That's page 30 or page Daf Tesvav Amud Beis, the 11th chapter of Tanya. Having described in chapter 9 the ongoing battle between the divine soul and the animal soul in the life of the human being, the battle to capture and to dominate one's life and one's body, the author of Shnei Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, continued in chapter 10 to define the term tzaddik within the context of this struggle and battle. He explained that a tzaddik is that Jew who succeeded in tapping into his divine soul and making it the soul reality and voice in his life, not only in his external life but also in his internal life. Because both of these souls, the divine soul as well as the animal soul, consists of what the Alter Rebbe defined in the previous chapters, 3 and 4, as koiches and levushim. Koiches are the inner set of spiritual faculties and attributes that make a personality, that design its character, its inner psyche, and spiritual anatomy. Those are the koiches, and these include all of the inner emotions and faculties of the soul, whether intellectual, cognitive, emotional, functional. Then, every soul also has levushim, garments, which are the mediums through which it expresses its inner personality. Those are the garments of thought, speech, and action. Thought in the mind, speech in the mouth, and action in the hands, or in all the other limbs and organs of the human body. The battle between the two souls over man's life is a battle both concerning the kaiches and concerning the levushim. In other words, the struggle between them is not only concerning the levushim dynamic, whether man's mind, mouth, or limbs and other organs should be serving the divine soul or should be serving the animal soul. It's also an internal struggle concerning the inner koiches. Whose koiches should play a role in man's life? Should it be the divine soul koiches, divine soul's koiches, or the animal soul's koiches? Should man's love, affection, warmth, inner desires and instincts be those of the divine soul or those of the animal soul? The same is true concerning man's understanding and man's functional faculties. In the context of this struggle, the tzaddik is the one who managed to prevail over the animal soul to the extent that the only personality that functions within his life is that of the divine soul, both in the koiches realm as well as in the levushim realm. In the tzaddik itself, the Alter Rebbe said, there are generally two categories, that of the complete tzaddik, who not only eradicated the animal soul, but transformed it, and that of the incomplete tzaddik, who subdued the negative impulses of the animal soul, but nevertheless has not transformed it, and something still remains embedded within his character. Nevertheless, it is subdued to the nefesh alikis, to the divine soul, and is not felt in his conscious self. Parenthetically speaking, I saw this week an idea of Reb Tzadik HaKayin. Reb Tzadik HaKayin was an extraordinary Hasidic thinker, sage, and scholar who lived in the 19th century. He was a Rebbe in Lublin. And he authored numerous works, Pri Tzadik is the most famous, or Sisi Laila. So he has a sefer called Divrei Chalemus. So he says an interesting concept concerning the difference between a Tzadik Gomer and a Tzadik She'eni Gomer. He says, if in the conscious self there is no sensation, there is no experience of the Nefesh HaBahamis because it's totally subdued, so where is the difference recognized in concrete terms? So he says, when both of these types of tzaddikim are up, indeed there is no difference. He says the difference is only in the dreams, because the dreams are a mirror and a reflection of subconscious forces that exist within the human being. So he says the tzaddik gomer, his dreams and other times of his life are totally identical. The same holiness, the same godliness that pervades every moment of his conscious life and behavior, that very same godliness permeates every iota of his dreams as well. The tzaddik she'eni gomer, who has within him still something of the previous reality of the Nefesh HaBahamis, albeit that it's absolutely subdued and not felt. But nevertheless, in the dreams, he says, that something can come out.
When a tzaddik washes dishes, what does he think about?
When a tzaddik washes dishes, what does he think about? I hope that the dishes should come out clean. I don't know. Washing dishes, nothing wrong with washing dishes. It could be a very helpful thing to wash dishes. There was once a Jew who was experiencing Shalom Bayis problems. His relationship with his wife wasn't going so well. He visited at that time the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he related to him his problem. And he told the Rebbe that he heard someone told him that a zgula for Shalom Bayis, a good idea for Shalom Bayis, is if you fold up your talis right away Saturday night after Ma'ariv. So the Rebbe said, yeah, perhaps it's a zgula. Maybe it's a good idea, but I have a better zgula for you. Wash the dishes, Mitzvah Shabbos. Anyway.
I don't
know. I don't know.
My wife would
agree
with that.
Yeah. Okay. Following the explanation of what tzaddik is in the context of the above-mentioned struggle, the author now goes on to explain what the definition of a rush is. Again, in the context of this struggle described so vividly in the Tanya. Let's learn inside. One is opposite of the other. Shlomo HaMelech writes in Kehelis, the author quoted it before the beginning of chapter 6, that our entire universe was created in a manner that one is opposite of the other, which is referring to the energies, to the forces of good and evil, where every force of evil has its opposing force of good, or conversely. The Rasha who knows good is the antithesis of the tzaddik who knows evil. Just as concerning the tzaddik, we have the two general categories of a complete tzaddik and an incomplete tzaddik. Or another terminology, a tzaddik v'tayvle and a tzaddik v'rali, a tzaddik who knows only good and a tzaddik who also knows evil, though it's subdued. The Rasha can also be divided generally in two categories, the Rasha Gomer and the Rasha She'eni Gomer, the complete Rasha, the complete wicked person, or the incomplete Rasha, or the Rasha V'tevlai and the Rasha V'ralei, the Rasha who still knows good, that would be the incomplete Rasha, and the Rasha who knows only evil, the Rasha V'ralei, which would correspond to the Rasha Gomer, to the complete Rasha. So the Alter Rebbe says, Zelu umazeh, in the general structure of the universe, where every force of evil has every force of good has an opposing force of evil, the tzaddik v'ralei stands opposed to the rasha v'tevlei. The tzaddik v'ralei is what? The tzaddik who basically his life is dominated by good. However, there is still ra within him, subdued to the good. So what corresponds to that in the negative element of life? The Rosh HaVitavla, which is, the Ra exists within him in a very powerful way. However, there is still Taiv in him, although this Taiv is subdued to the Ra. So the Rosh HaVitavla is La'umas the Tzadik Rural. The Hainu, this means Sha'at Taiv Shabanafshi Alakis Shabamechi B'challa Yamani Shabalibai, that the good that is in this Rosh's divine soul, which is in his mind and in the right part of his heart, these being the chief dwelling places of the divine soul, as explained in chapter 9. So this good which is in the divine soul of this Jew, kafuf ubatal lagabi harame aklipa shabachal asmal, is subservient to and nullified within the evil of the animal soul, which stems from the klipa, which is in the left part of man's heart, as explained again in chapter 9. So this human being has a divine soul, and that divine soul is good, is godly, is holy, is absolutely connected to the reality of Hashem. But nevertheless, in this human being's life, what has taken hold of him is his nefesh habahamas, is the klipa, the husk existence that exists and is embedded within the Jew. And the good, the character, the identity of the nefesh halakis is subdued to the character, the vision, and the identity of the nefesh habahamas from klipa. This rank too is subdivided into myriads of degrees, just as the rank of the tzaddik who knows evil is subdivided into myriads and myriads of ranks, gradations, and levels, as the author discussed in the previous chapter, chapter 10, with respect to the nullification of the evil within him to the good, how much evil has remained, what type of evil, what quality, and so on and so forth. So this level too, in the lo'umaza of the tzaddik virale, the Rosh HaVitavle, this rank too is subdivided into many, many different degrees and levels. There's not one stoic role model, this is a Rosh HaVitavle. The variations between one category of Rosh HaVitavle and another category of Rosh HaVitavle can actually be quite extreme. What is the difference? Chalukais. The difference between these myriad sub-levels lies be'inyin kamus ve'echus habitol u'kfifas atev l'rachas v'shalom. The quantity and the quality of the nullification and subservience of the good to the evil, God forbid. Both in the quantity area, there could be many differences, and the quality area, in both quantitatively and qualitatively, there are the many differences between different types of Rishayah. So we can discuss which quality of the good is bottled to the Ra. A certain quality can be bottled, another quality cannot be bottled, because the Nefesh HaLikis is multifaceted, it's multi-layered, it's multidimensional. A certain dimension can be bottled, another dimension not bottled. And the same is true kamos, how much of it is bottled, as the Alter Rebbe will go on to describe. And in this chapter, he's going to give two examples on the two extremes. He's going to discuss first the highest level and category in a Rosh HaVitavle, in whose life the bittul, the nullification of the good to the evil, is extremely minute, both quantitatively and qualitatively. And then he will give another example on the other extreme, the lowest level in Rosh HaVitavle. And this is what he starts addressing. Yesh mi shakfifa v'habitul atzlei ma'at mizeh. There is one in whom the subservience and nullification of good to evil are exceedingly minor. Va'av gamzeis. And even these minor degrees, einei b'tmidus, are not permanent, v'loi tadir l'prakim kreivim, nor recurrent at frequent times, at frequent intervals. Ela le'itim rechaikim mizgaber hara l'atayf. Rather, only on infrequent occasions does the evil prevail over the good. Conquering the small city, which is the body, The body, as mentioned in chapter 9, is likened to the small city whose conquest is the objective of both the divine soul and the animal soul. So this Jew, although we say that he's a Rasha, because his divine soul is subdued to the animal soul, but nevertheless, this subservience, this nullification of the good to the evil, is exceedingly minor. And even this nullification is not a permanent reality. It's not a permanent recurrence. Rather, it happens only on very infrequent occasions that the Nefesh HaBahamas actually dominates the Nefesh HaLikus and manages to conquer the city which is man's body. And furthermore, even when the Nefesh HaBahamas does manage to conquer the body, not always, at some occasion, it's like kulay. It's not even all of the body. Ela miktsasi levat, only part of it. What does it actually accomplish? Sheyia sar lemashma'asei v'nasile merkava. Subjecting it, that part of the body, to its discipline, and causing it to be a chariot to its character, to its identity, ulavush, and a garment liislabish by echad mishloisha levushahana, where in one of the animal souls aforementioned three garments will be clothed. What the Nefesh HaBahamas succeeds is to dominate at some infrequent time a certain part of the body and make the body a chariot, which means a vehicle, an instrument, or a garment through which her, the animal soul's character, can be expressed. This part of the body, whatever it may be, the hand, the leg, the mouth, the nose, we'll soon see, becomes at that moment a garment which becomes subservient to express and reflect the character of the Nefesh HaBahamas. The Hainu. Namely, the animal soul prevails Ibn Maisalavad, either indeed alone. Las is Averus Kalas Valechamuris Khaswashal in the commission of minor transgressions, not major ones, God forbid. In other words, even when the animal soul does capture the body, A, it's not constant. B, it's only part of the body. And C, only to the extent that the body becomes a garment to perform minor avedas, minor commissions, not stringent ones. This is indeed aibedibulavat, or it may prevail in speech alone. Ledaber avaklash and harev letzanusukai gavna. Merely in the utterance of that which borders on slander of another human being, or litzanus, or scoffing. Over here, or the like, v'kai gavna. Over here, the animal soul has dominated man's faculty of speech. So his faculty of speech, the levush adibur, and his mouth, have become a garment to express the character of the animal soul. How? Through speaking. Lashon hara, or avak lashon hara, which is not lashon hara, which is something that borders on slander or borders on scoffing. That is what the Nefesh HaBahamas managed to captivate. Or the evil may prevail in thought alone, not even in deeds, not even in speech. In contemplations of sin, which are in certain respects worse than actual sin. The Gemara says in Yuma, on the top, that contemplation of sin in certain areas, in certain respects, are worse than sin itself. So this person thinks that the fact that the Nefesh HaBahamas is dominated only his machshav is meaningless. Alter Rebbe says, no, in a certain area, Huri Aveira Kasha Me'aveira. The meaning of this is, there's actually an argument among the commentaries. Rashi writes on the spot that Huri Aveira is not referring stam to contemplation of sin, one who is contemplating and meditating upon doing a sin. Rather, it's speaking about, according to Rashi, thinking about an immoral physical relationship. So Rashi is saying the thought about it affects negatively the body even more than the actual implementation of that thought. the Maral in the Sivas Olam in the Siva Precious in the beginning in the second chapter says, according to Rashi, the Gemara should have said that hirhurim about znus, hirhurim about immoral relationships are kosher from the ma'aseh itself. What does that have to do with hirhuri aveira kosher me'aveira? It doesn't have to do with contemplation of sin. This specific area of relationships, the thought affects the body more than the actual deed. So the Maharal explains that it's referring to the actual concept of hirhuri aveira, of general contemplation of sin due to the fact that the mind is seichel. Deed is physical. He says seichel is much deeper connected to man's soul and character. There's an intrinsic, a much deeper intrinsic connection between man's soul and his seichel. So when your seichel gets involved in a sin, he says you're much more connected with it. Of course, concerning the actual effects and punishments and penalties, you need ma'isim, achshava doesn't suffice. But concerning what he calls the dibuk, the union, the connection of man's personality with a negative thing, on the contrary, in a certain respect, here it is even more powerful. But in any event, you mean similar to Saf Perik Ches about Chachmas Chitzeni, is that it's Matama the Chabad, not only the Midas, versus Varim Betalim. Yeah? So, B'meila, the Alter Rebbe is saying that it's possible that his Nefesh Bahamas should prevail only in the area of Machshava. But nevertheless, Hiruri Aveir is Kashem Aveir. V'gam, imeini ma'arib Aveir la'saisa. This is the case even where one does not actually contemplate committing a sin. He's not thinking, okay, let me go about to commit this sin. This is what I want to do, and he thinks about it. But he doesn't do it for some reason. Even more than this. He merely indulges in contemplation on the physical union of the male and female in general. He's not actually thinking, contemplating to perform a sin in his life. He's just having a general thought about this concept. In this case, the person is violating the admonition of the Torah in Parshas Ki Seitzeh. The Torah says you shall guard yourself from every wicked thing. So our sages interpret it as an injunction. The Gemara says on this in Ksuvas Daf Mem Vav that the person must not harbor impure fancies by day. That's the conclusion. So that he will not become polluted spiritually at night. So contemplation on these matters violates a command of the Torah. Another example where a person's machshava falls prey to the dominion of the Nefesh HaBahamas. It's a time fitting for Torah study. And he turns his heart to inane, hollow, purposeless matters. Kedetnam ba'avis, as stated in the Mishnah and Tractate Avis, Perigimel and Mishnah Dalit, Haneir b'lay l'chul o'mefana l'bichul. He who awakens at night when he has time to study Torah and turns his heart to vanity. So the Mishnah concludes, Arezim is chayev b'nafshi, he is guilty against his own soul. So in the latter two instances, where one has a ruri avera, or one utilizes a time fitting for Torah study, and instead utilizes his machshava for issues that are totally of vanity, hollow. In these two instances, the animal soul's garments of thought have prevailed and manifested themselves in man's body. Sheba'achas mikol elu v'kayetzibah. In any of all these instances or their like, whether one commits even a minor transgression in thought, speech, or action, nikri rasha be'esahi, he is called a rasha, a wicked person at that time. Why? Sha'arasha benafshei gaver bay umislabish begufay umachtiri umetameh. The term rasha, meaning that the evil of his animal soul prevails within him, clothing itself in his body, inducing it to sin and defiling it. So that's the definition of a Rasha in context of Tanya. That although what happened was his mouth for one moment has fallen prey to the character of the Nefesh HaBahamas, but ultimately, in the most authentic term of what a tzaddik and what a rosh is, this is what a rosh is. That his Nefesh HaBahamas managed to get a hold over his body. It managed to capture the body, even one aspect of the body, for a moment. But it managed to become dominant over the person's physical life and behavior in a certain area. So in this struggle between the Nefesh HaLakis and the Nefesh HaBahamas, there can be various responses. The tzaddik doesn't experience the struggle, consciously at least, as discussed earlier. The Beinoni experiences the struggle in a powerful way, but never allows it to determine his behavior. Never allows the animal soul to actually get a hold of the city. So it fights, it fights, it fights. It wants to get a hold of the little city of man, but the Beinoni doesn't allow the conflict to determine his behavior. The Rasha, however, sometimes loses in the sense that the divine soul becomes subdued to the animal soul. Why is that? Where does that express itself? It expresses itself not only as an internal struggle in the Kaiches, where Nefesh HaBahamas gravitates towards one thing, Nefesh HaLakis gravitates towards another thing, but rather sometimes the Nefesh HaBahamas rather conquers, overwhelms the Nefesh HaLakis, subdues it, and expresses itself in man's behavior. So when a person speaks slander against another human being, or scoffs from another human being, what happens at that moment? What happens at that moment? His Nefesh HaLakis didn't want to do that. Because Nefesh HaLakis will never want to harm another human being, because it's godly. And it seeks what's true, what's right, what's honest. The Nefesh HaBahamas is an animal. And if I need to insult you because, for whatever reason, whether I have to get something from you, whether at this moment this is what's going to give me comfort, I'm going to be satiated through this, I do it. So the Nefesh HaBahamas says, okay, here you have an opportunity to say up some good stick of Lashon Hara. Yeah? To really give it into this person. It's a good piece of slander. One second. So if we're in touch with our Nefesh HaLakis, so you'll hear another voice telling you, it's not the right thing to do. Sometimes we're not even in touch with Nefesh HaLakis, so we don't even have that other voice. So the Nefesh HaBahamas immediately takes over, and we do that, we say what we say. So what happens at that moment? Our mouth has become now a vehicle and an instrument, which is housing which soul the Nefesh HaLakis. Whose character is it expressing? Whose identity is it bringing to the fore? Whose vision, whose instincts is it implementing? The Nefesh HaBahamas. So the inner kaiches of the Nefesh HaBahamas have now expressed themselves through man's mouth, through the levush hadibur, through the garment of speech, but it has now become a garment not to the divine soul, but to the animal soul. The same is true concerning when your hand or another organ becomes an instrument to do a transgression. So then what happens at that moment is the Nefesh HaBahamas dominated man's life. So the Alter Rebbe says it could be, it doesn't happen always, every moment of the day or every hour. It can happen at infrequent occasions. And that itself can be only part of the body. And that itself can only be minor issues. Because the Nefesh HaLakis will never allow it to influence man's body in more stringent issues. But even in those issues, in these areas, the Nefesh HaBahamas conquered the Nefesh HaLakis. Yeah.
I was
going to
say, supposing what you call a complete tzaddik is walking and seeing women who are immodestly dressed, wouldn't he have some Freudian thoughts toward these type of ladies or women?
The complete tzaddik is walking in the street and sees immodest
dressed women.
You want to know what type of thoughts would the tzaddik have?
Yeah.
You have to ask a tzaddik. I'm not a tzaddik. Huh? Do we have a tzaddik in the room? Anyone? Anyone volunteer for a tzaddik? Huh?
22.
What the? Yeah. Okay, so we do have a tzaddik in the room. Based on what I said, you're blaming me. Okay, does a tzaddik only use his machshava dibur maisa to serve the nefesh alikis, so he actually taps into the very soul? Or can someone really do that? Each one of the souls has a whole inner personality and structure. It has its wants, its desires, how it understands things, what it loves in life, what it despises in life. The whole inner personality of what makes us conscious human beings, how we feel about things, how we view things, how we perceive things, how we relate to things, how we interact with things and our inner feelings, besides our thought, speech, and action, this whole personality varies differently in these two souls. The Nefesh HaLikis's internal personality is godly, transcendental, and spiritual. The Nefesh HaBahamas's internal personality is extremely mundane, earthly, animalistic, and selfish. In addition to that, man has his faculties of thought, speech, and action, which are garments that serve as expressions, as mediums or instruments which express the character of these souls. You have the Jew who, as you just described it, manages to prevail his nefesh halekis in the areas of thought, speech, and action, which means that his actual thought, speech, and action are nothing but expressions of the nefesh halekis's character and identity. Does it mean that his internal personality is a nefesh halekisdika personality? Not necessarily. His internal personality is a split. He has a dichotomy in his life. His behavior is an expression of the nefesh halekis. That's the beinoni of Tanya. Then you have the tzaddik. The tzaddik is someone, no, not only is machshava dibur maisa consistent with the nefesh halekis. What the tzaddik succeeded in doing is, he tapped into the nefesh halekis, not only identified it, not only sensed it, not only hears it, not only relates to it, not only lives his life based on it. Rather, what he did was, the nefesh halekis's personality, persona, became his internal psychological, emotional, and spiritual structure.